This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, June 10th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. Open societies learn from other societies. As Islam turned inward centuries ago, it was in many ways left behind culturally and technologically. Cato's Mustafa Akyol discusses some of the elements of this shift in his new column in the New York Times. We spoke last week.
Who cares where the numbers we use come from? Why is this something that people are concerned about?
Well, in a sense, you wouldn't care. I mean, people borrow ideas from each other. Civilizations borrow ideas from each other. But then people think, oh, it's only our civilization which has produced these things. Then they start to take a position that I call civilizational nationalism. And to break that kind of bias, I think you need to sometimes look into the sources of wisdom that has been transferred from one place to another in human history. I see a lot of emphasis among Western conservatives, in particular American conservatives, on Judeo-Christian tradition and Judeo-Christian values. And of course, it's important. I mean, Judeo-Christian values, I mean, biblical values, I mean, they certainly infuse into Western civilization. And they were abused sometimes, but they were also helpful for abolishing slavery or, like, for example, Martin Luther King's, for example, interpretation, values like that. But I wanted to say, well, the West had inputs from others as well. And those others especially include the civilization that is seen as most at odds with the West today, which is Islam. That's so, why they're called Arabic numerals, and there's a history behind that. Let's look into that history. So that was my the gist of my article.
Let's take it at face value and say, okay, well, only the contributions that Europeans have made to the world ought to be the ones that we make use of. We need to get rid of all tariffs, right?
Yeah.
Because that's a word that we've taken from the Arab languages.
Indeed. Well, it might be a good idea to get rid of tariffs. That's a different thing. But that term itself, tariff, comes from ta'arif, which is an Arabic word, which is to make known or to designate. And in the article, I explained that, I mean, there are many words in English today, like alcohol actually comes from Arabic, you know, like booze. And
well, now you're going too far. We can't give up the alcohol.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, alchemy, I mean, algebra, algorithm, these English or French, you know, words have, and the word check, I mean, the paper you get from a bank, well, it's disputed, but some scholars at least think that it comes from the Arabic word suck, which is a bond, a written document. It's used still in Arabic as sukuk, which is bonds in so-called Islamic banking. So there are these roots. And behind that phenomenon, there is a reality, which is, 1,000 years ago, Muslims were quite productive. They were inventors. They were pioneers in mathematics and geometry and science and medicine and all that. So Islam could produce a pretty brilliant civilization, which was also quite, for its own time, tolerant and pluralistic.
When you talk to smart Muslims about the contributions of Islamic civilization, how much pride do they take in these things that happened many hundreds of years ago?
Well, most Muslims are proud of the medieval accomplishments of the Islamic civilization. They sometimes see a lot of power in there, like, oh, we were militarily great. For me, that is not that important. Plus, it was derivative. I mean, you had military might because actually you had better technology. So we should look into that technology. But one thing I underline in the article is that we Muslims are proud that 1,000 years ago, our civilization was really the most advanced in the world. But we don't think enough what happened to it and why it declined. And I mean, some people think, oh, we became sinners, so God punished us. We became less pious. I mean, this is the typical argument of the people we call Islamists. They see human history as an arena where God gives victory to this or that people. And they think that God gave victory to the West because we're not pious enough. So we have to be more pious. So we should force all women to cover their heads. We should make everybody pray on time so that God will give us victory again. So that's obviously a wrong interpretation in my view. And I want to say, well, what made us great once was things called free speech, rule of law. They weren't called as such at the time, but we had the seeds of those values.
What then do you view as the relationship between tolerance? You said that as Islamic society was making a lot of contributions to civilization, they were also fairly tolerant. What's the relationship?
The relationship is this. Early Islamic civilization, for its own time, was tolerant in the sense that it accepted that Jews and Christians can remain as Jews and Christians and live in Muslim society. They didn't have the exact equal rights, but still just tolerating them as such was a big deal. And these Jews and Christians were the pre-existing communities in the Middle East had traditions. They had traditions of philosophy. Eastern Christians were the ones who translated Aristotle and other Greek thinkers into languages like Syriac or Aramaic. So when Muslims tolerated these people rather than destroying them or, you know, forcing them to convert or flee, they could learn from them. And you see this in this great institution called House of Wisdom, Bayt al-Hikmah, which was established in Baghdad under the Abbasid Caliphate, which is very much the core of at least the beginning of this big Islamic scientific advance. And there were Muslims certainly running the institution, but there were a lot of Christians employed. So those Christians were given pretty good salaries for their time. And since they knew Syriac, they could translate from that or from Greek to Arabic. So the very fact that Muslims tolerated non-Muslims allowed them to learn from non-Muslims. And they learned from Hindus as well. They learned from Greeks. I mean, they could read Aristotle. I mean, and Aristotle was kind of a almost like a god, divinely ordained, like a thinker. There's a famous story, like one of the caliphs who established the Bayt al-Hikmah or the House of Wisdom. He saw Aristotle in his dream, and Aristotle, like a prophet, appeared to him and spoke about the reason and the wisdom it brings. So that allowed Muslims. But that kind of mentality became growingly marginalized in Islam. There is a time between the 8th and 12th centuries that you had these philosophers who were thinking about studying, translating, and commenting on these pre-existing traditions. They learned from Jewish and Christian traditions, Greeks. But that gradually became marginalized. And a lot of Muslims started to think, what we have is enough, right? Other sources of wisdom, they're not wisdom. They're gonna lead us astray. And philosophy was delegitimized. We are generally proud of the books of Averroes, Muslims. I mean, he was the great medieval Muslim thinker in the 12th century, Spain, who actually introduced Aristotle to Europe. So he's pretty big. But his own books on Aristotle were burned in Cordoba because it was heresy. That's why we don't have the Arabic versions of the originals of those books. We have their Latin and Hebrew translations, which influenced Europe pretty impressively. So I think Muslims need to go back and think why we became less close-minded. And it has a lot to do with how we understand theology, how we understand reason, how much room we create for reason.
Mustafa Akyol is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter @Cato Podcast.